Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
It's good to have you around. It was great to have Bruce Bochy. If you missed the beginning of that, we'll replay it. Little Boch 2 Electric Boogaloo coming up in our 5 o'clock hour. Right now, we're happy to turn our attention back to the NFL. We're happy to say hello to Sean Salisbury, who is the host of a show that is named the Sean Salisbury Show. Not the most original I've ever heard of, but it does describe it well. Sports Talk 790 down in Houston. We're very happy to have him back on here. Been a fan to Sean for a while. And you know what? Darren Smith, who was in with me, knows this guy too. A couple San Diego boys I'm talking to. How you doing, Sean?
Favorite dudes, man. D. Smith, what's going on? It's great to be with you, Damon. I appreciate always coming on there, guys. Thanks for having me.
Sean, a lot of very fond memories from our days together through Bristol and elsewhere.
Dude, not just fond, but not only not fond and great, but some of them I'll never forget, and that's in a good way. You're the best, brother. I'm glad you're up there, and great to be on with you two always.
Sean Salisbury here on the Dial Pad. Guest line Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. So, obviously, we love talking quarterback with you. You understand the position very, very well, having played it for so many years. Jimmy Garoppolo is all out of time in terms of a honeymoon. It's show us what you got. Not interested in the labor pains. Let's see the baby. Is this a year where the 49ers take that step forward? A lot of people, I think, are more excited nationally than maybe even locally.
Yeah, I know I am, guys. I am a big fan of his. I'm a big mechanics guy and how quickly the ball comes out, and Jimmy's got it. And there's a DNA in certain players, I think, that just know how to throw it to places that the normal human being can't and won't. And I think about quarterbacks that have been with Kyle Shanahan, like when he was in Atlanta before he got the job. And really, Jimmy had part of a season, then an injury. So really, this is kind of a second year for him. They explode on the scene. I mean, this team's improving. They've, you know, draft picks wise, they are going to be dangerous. Now, I don't know how big a playoff or Super Bowl threat they are right now, but they're that team, kind of like the Padres, Darren, and you know what I'm talking about. They're building it, and they'll get a veteran. They'll start to build it through the draft, and in 2 years, the Padres are going to be nasty in the National League, just like the Astros used to be. You suffer through some times, and then all of a sudden it clicks. I'm a big Kyle Shanahan fan. I am a big Jimmy Garoppolo fan. Yeah, I agree with you. I think some people locally may be a little bit jaded. Oh, man. And considering where he comes from or where he's playing, they've had a pretty good history with a couple of guys that weren't half bad at quarterback there over the history, so he's got big shoes. But I'm going to tell you what, a full season of health and Kyle Shanahan and weapons and Jimmy Garoppolo will prove to be one. And it won't be long before we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo as a top-10 quarterback. I think he's got that kind of ability, and he is in that Marino Rodgers, up, out, the ball, quick release type football. People are going to love Jimmy. I can't wait to see him for 16 games and fully healthy.
Obviously, you would prefer to play than not to play, Sean, but I would love to get your thoughts on. There's nothing you can do. You get injured, the torn ACL. All of you guys go through it at some point. But what are the things that you can do to improve yourself if you are shelved that way like Jimmy Garoppolo was last season?
Watch and watch and watch, and 2 ears and one mouth, use them accordingly. And I'll tell you one thing that I've...
Oh, we just get sniped?
Spent time. Can you guys hear me okay?
We got you. We lost you for a second. Yeah, good to have you back. Okay, let's go ahead and reset that if we can, please, with Sean Salisbury, whose cell phone started letting us down just a little bit there. We got off to a great start. We really did. I thought we were going to have ourselves a nice little connection. Albie, let me know when he's back online.
That Niners-Padre comparison was not one I was prepared for.
Right. Yeah.
I understand what he's saying, but it was...
There he is. We got Sean Salisbury back here on 95.7 The Game. Sean.
Yeah, and there's a lot to learn, but when you see early stuff about a quarterback that tells you he's got a chance, but we still got to see it on the field. But when you're hurt, I tell quarterbacks, go spend time in the defensive room. Find out what they do to defend you. Go talk to other guys on the defensive staff, because they're the ones who are drawing up plays to defeat good quarterbacks. So you can obviously, the physical side, the rehab and going through it. But, guys, there's nothing better than repetition. And we've heard the old stories about, well, you can't shoot free throws, but if you can visualize. Sounds cheesy, but it's true. But there's so much you can do in watching and anticipating. And you can learn two valuable lessons from the preparation of watching film to the point where it's etched in your mind how people approach you and how they've defended you. And also go back and look what you do, what you did in New England on your own film, how you're released, your footwork, and what you did in San Francisco before you got hurt and when you were healthy, the good and the bad, and be a great self-critic. So I spend a lot of time, and I tell them, talk to the defensive coaches, not just your offensive coaches. Talk to the defensive coaches, and you'll get a better idea, because you can never be too prepared. But there's another thing, guys, and then be a football player. I put it on Twitter today. I learned a valuable lesson from Jim McMahon years ago. It's one thing to study, but the chalkboard doesn't move. Sometimes you just got to be a football player and be a natural reactor, and Jimmy's got to let that happen too. And once he gets confident about putting his foot back in the ground, things will be fine.
Talking quarterbacking DNA with Sean Salisbury here on the Damon Bruce Show. What did you think of Derek Carr's DNA, and are you as high on it as you used to be if you did think that he was an up-and-comer a year or two ago?
Ian, I did. And it's easy to quit on a guy after an injury and some controversy and some people dogging him about what happened on the field, on the sidelines, and not having a good season. Been through coaching. I'm not making excuses for him, but why would I quit on him yet? Now, and let me tell you about John Gruden, and I love John, but John will fall in and out of love with quarterbacks as quick as the sun comes up and goes down now. He will. This is a monster year for Derek Carr and his growth to the next level and instilling confidence, because the quarterback position can gain it. Takes a long time to gain trust, guys, and you can lose it in a hurry. I think Derek Carr needs to get back to the perfect thing for Derek Carr, because when I see him from a distance, I think sometimes the overgrind or trying too hard. When I saw him at his best, things started to go well in the second half of games. Things started to go well on the road. I think he needs to does it make a sense to just loosen up the grip on life, and you don't have to choke everything out? And he is a grinder, and he's being coached by a grinder, and that can be difficult, and you can butt heads, but their personalities are completely different. But I am a believer in Derek Carr, but has it started? Have I taken a step back from it? Sure, we all do when a guy gets hurt, and then he had an MVP type season, gets hurt, and you know the team's obviously changed, and he's got to change with it. But great quarterbacks adjust to it. Great quarterbacks overcome any personnel, and they make that next guy or next receiver or next running back better. That'll be the challenge for Derek Carr. I'm not quitting on him. I think it's fashionable and easy now to say, oh, he sucks because. Well, maybe John was interested in Kyler Murray or somebody else. Watch how quickly a fast start makes everybody say, oh, Derek Carr's back. So this will be the most important year of his career. New coach, a team that's getting ready to move, and a big contract that people think he needs to validate. I'm not quitting on him, but I'm treading lightly on how good he'll be. And I think a lot of it's mental for him. I do, because I know he's a good football player. I think it's mental, and I think he's got his toughest challenge because he's dealing with a guy who will not back off on the grind in John Gruden. And that's a good thing for some. Some can't handle it. We're going to find out how mentally tough Derek Carr is this year.
And we get to see it all on HBO and Hard Knocks. Don't forget about that. Sean Salisbury, a tremendous guest, a tremendous host. Hell of a guy. Thank you so much.
Sean. I'm really sorry. I'm down here, ironically, I'm down here heading towards the racetrack. I got to give a speech to a college tonight. And I'm really, really sorry that the phone cut out. But you know I'm available for you guys anytime. I hope you could hear me okay.
No problem, brother. You sounded great. Thank you so much, man. Knock 'em dead at the speech tonight. Who are you talking to?
Palomar Junior College, their football team, and their opening camp. And Joe Early, who's their head coach, was a teammate of mine in high school. So I'm just going to go speak at him and try to motivate him, kick him in the ass a little bit, and let him realize that this is a privilege and that it ends quickly. So cherish every moment and do the lonely work. So there we go.
There you go. Sean Salisbury, man, you make me want to run through a wall. Thank you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
See you, Sean.
There he is. All guests appearing on the Dial Pad guest line. Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. Sean Salisbury, good, good, good people. When we come on back, much more around the corner. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you, How many shows give you a Tour de France update? We've got one for you coming up. More from Bruce Bochy a little bit later on. And make sure you stick around. 888-957-9570. Right now, Elena, update me. How are you?
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So I used the Twitter machine earlier to tell you that Brian Kenny was going to join us around 4:20. Our whole conversation with Bruce Bochy went long, knocked us off our clock a little bit. So Brian's going to join us in about half an hour from right now, coming up at 4:45. If you missed any of Bochy, we'll be talking Bruce Bochy once again in the 5 o'clock hour. My friend Darren Smith in studio all week long with yours truly as we, you know, go through the entire world of sports here. Today, we have the NBA rearing its head in terms of Shaquille O'Neal, who I guess was, what, on Kimmel last night? Was that what it was? Shaq was on Kimmel last night, and like so many who have come before him, as he looks back at, you know, the NBA that he played in, and he looks at the NBA now, he does not like what he sees. Here is Shaquille O'Neal talking about if he were playing today, he wouldn't want to be on a super team, which, you know, forget the fact that he was, but whatever.
I'm from the era where guys wanted to compete and, you know, beat each other. So I would wait and see, you know, who's teaming up and doing that. And I would go on the team that needs a superstar and I'd teach them guys how to beat the super teams.
By the way, I think that that comment would have like quite a bit more going for it had he never left Orlando. You know, like I don't want to say that he joined a super Lakers team, but he knew what he was doing when he was, teaming up with Kobe. I mean, we might not have called anything in the NBA super team back then, but there were many an NBA season that was preordained Lakers all day, all night, before the year even tipped off. What's he talking about? Shaq, you were on a super team, even if it wasn't built the way that they are today. And, I mean, like, that's some revisionist history right there.
Hey, Damon. I don't agree with that statement at all. When I left Orlando, I went to the lake.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a lot. It wouldn't be as hollow if he didn't play for six different teams, if he didn't go through Orlando, Los Angeles, Miami. We can split hairs about whether he joined. I mean, he went to go play with some of the best players in the league. He went to play with Kobe Bryant. He went to play with Dwayne Wade, who was entering his prime. You might think that that's not a super team, at least in terms of how we describe them today, but it's not like he went places where they had a rotten roster. He's not Chris Paul sitting around in Oklahoma City. You know, he went to play with Kobe Bryant and Dwayne Wade. These are two Hall of Famers.
Right. I mean, and let's be totally honest. He tried to chase lightning in the bottle when he put on that Celtics jersey. What were the Cavaliers doing when didn't he have a cup of coffee with the Cleveland Cavaliers too?
I did. Yes. Towards the tail end. Yeah. He has six teams there. Boston was really the most forgettable of all of the stops for him, but come on. I mean, we all understand that. I think the Warriors really got a crummy rap in all of this and that it was Miami. It was part of the collaboration and other. It's a little hollow for me with Shaquille O'Neal and Jimmy Kimmel.
By the way, he was asked why Kawhi decided to join the Clippers and not his Lakers, and he said there is a former Laker that is the reason why Kawhi chose the Clippers.
Because Jerry West is a master.
Jerry West, who works for the Clippers now.
Jerry West is a master. Jerry West knows how to read people, and he probably had a conversation with him, and probably was just straight up with him.
Is that what he did with you, Jerry West?
Because, you know, when I was in Orlando, Lakers wasn't even in a position. And I had one conversation with Jerry, and Jerry just came over with a piece of paper. He said, you want the good news or the bad news? I said, I'll take the bad news. He said, we can't get you 150. And I said, well, what's the good news? We can get you 120. Give me that damn paper.
So, that's right. You know, Shaquille did get to L.A. before Kobe was drafted, right? I mean, that, yes.
Was that right?
I think so. But let's not pretend that the Lakers were this, you know, team that was searching for relevancy when he decided to join them. No, it was like, if you're a great NBA center, you're going to go to L.A. I mean, that was kind of the path for a while, and it's one that he wanted to follow. But this whole knocking
you're the right, league, 96, you're yeah, right, my
the,
bad.
The league that you used to be in, and the way the league is right now. Let me tell you, these super teams are absolutely more interesting than anyone wants to admit. And Yeah, I think it's funny that people. All right. Today, again, somebody I heard say that Kevin Durant joining the Warriors was the weakest move ever. I understand what thought logic would bring you to that conclusion. Like, I do. I get it. I understand why a lot of people looked at that and said that. But it was because of the way that Durant handled it that turned it into a weak move. It would have been the boss move to end all boss moves if he came out here and decided to rule the roost for the better part of 6, 7, 8, 9 years and literally leave no cookies or crumbs for anybody else. Like, what would have made him come into the Warriors the ultimate boss move is if he said, I'm here to ruin everybody's dreams. I'm here to destroy the NBA. No championships for anyone not wearing this uniform. Eventually, the world would have been like, damn, dude, that is some serious level. You know, this is how you corner a drug market. Like, this is the only dude. It would have been killer. And what was the only weak element of that was that Durant really wasn't that guy. Like, when everyone called him villain, 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 that wasn't music to his ears. It hit his ears toxically. To me, he made the move to wear the black hat, and then he was just really uncomfortable wearing it.
I mean, from afar, the only thing I remember saying about that was, you know, it seemed to me like you were pretty competitive with the Warriors right before you left. So an argument could have been made that another cycle through could have produced a different result.
Right.
That's a 7-game series. You're up 3-1. Okay. But I don't, you work your way in towards free agency. I, for the life of me, I'm telling you, Damon, I just don't get the criticism here. Who wouldn't want to join any sort of structure? And this goes for Shaq or this who manipulated the trade and for any other player. Like, who wouldn't want to put themselves in any line of work where it was advantageous for the employee? Like,
You're better set up to succeed. You're better set up to make more money over here than over there. Everyone who chooses over here in the business world is making a choice that no one argues with, unless it's sports.
Unless it's sports, right, because we hold on to these ideals that everybody's just going to remain in one place forever unless the team decides that they no longer are interested in those services.
We go to Christian in Walnut Creek. Christian, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hello.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well, thank you.
So 1994, this is before Shaq came to Lakers, before Kobe was a Laker drafted or anything like that. I was at a barbecue in San Jose, and one of my friend's dads had his friend there who knows people in the Lakers organization, and he told me Shaq is leaving Orlando in 2 years, and he will be a Laker because he wants to pursue Hollywood. So I don't think – I'm not a Laker fan. I hate the Lakers. I don't think he came for the super team. I think he came for Hollywood.
For Shazam.
Yeah, Shazam.
Right, for Shazam.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I remember how good – did you see the 30 for 30 on how good those Magic teams were, the Magic moment?
Oh, my goodness.
That is
him and Penny?
That's one of the better teams that never got it done.
Yeah, I mean, I love lists like that, too. The best teams that never got over the hump and never got to a championship. I do like talking about that. I know it's sort of it sounds a little weird.
It's the Buffalo Bill Memorial conversation.
Right, although, you know, even in hindsight now, think of how – who's going to go to 4 straight championships? Who's going to go to 4 straight Super Bowls, even if you lose, right? Like, that is really, really unique to
them. I've contended that losing 4 Super Bowls in a row – is much more impressive than winning any one Super Bowl. And yeah, I know that flies in the face of how we only salute rings now
rings,
these days.
Yo,
that's it.
Rings
that's
with it. A Z. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily disagree. I do think, though, if you were to present that option, because I get where you're coming from here, and I think it's a debatable point, and I think that if this were debate class and you wanted to take that side, I think you could build a hell of an argument. I do think, though, if you were to present that to the masses and say, well, you can have 4 appearances in the Super Bowl or 1 Super Bowl victory. Didn't even Jim Kelly himself say that on the Tonight Show? You take the Super Bowl victory.
Of course you take the Super Bowl.
But I know what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
But I know what you're saying.
As you look back through the prism of maturity and history, you know, then it makes a little sense to you.
Right, and I'm very much a journey guy, like, and not Journey the band.
Yes,
and,
no, I know.
You know. I mean, I'm about the journey. I think that the journey is so much a big part of sports.
I agree.
I love the destination, too, and you're playing for titles. But, man, I appreciate the journey in sports.
And we focus way too much on the destination.
I agree.
I mean, it really is.
And sometimes it's random. Sometimes the destination, it's just randomly a ball bounces for a ground rule double or a ball falls out. I mean, the games are so close, so razor thin. A weird call in the NFC Championship game. But, man, I've always been appreciate the journey guy.
Go ahead and send it, you know, like put me in the interrogation chair with the spotlight and the sodium pentothal and the is it safe line of questioning. And I'm under questioning, I would probably fold and have to tell you that my favorite Warrior team was 73 without a title.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. I mean, now, are titles more satisfying? Of course they are. When we sit around and talk about the great teams, we'll have three championship teams probably mentioned before that one. But then again, God, I still, if you can't appreciate the beauty in second place sometimes, you're not doing it right.
Especially there where it's 73. And did you love the journey? Did you enjoy that through 82, through the postseason, through a seven-game series? Of course you're disappointed at the end of it. Most fans are disappointed at the end of it, but I always say this as a sports fan myself and two sports fans out there, you got to enjoy the journey, man. You just do. If they give you, if a team gives me, I'm not a championship or bust kind of guy. I mean, I hope that doesn't make me sound like a loser and people will say, well, you're from San Diego.
How else do you live in San Diego? Right. Come on.
But I've always appreciated the highs and lows of a season. That's why you're watching all of those games.
What's the pressure to take up surfing in San Diego?
It was pretty high when I first got there. Didn't go well. Didn't go well at all. Did a little bit of boogie boarding, but you know, that water's cold, yo. That is cold for sure.
Moose in San Jose. What's going on, Moose?
Damon, I'm gonna agree with you on this. I've been saying this for a couple years now, since before the weird Durant tension even started. But your take on him coming out there, him taking all the flack for coming to this team, I said he comes here and he monopolizes championships with this team. That's the biggest FU to all the haters. He spends 6+ years here, monopolizes some rings, and that's an FU to every single hater, everyone that had anything against him joining this team. But like you said, for some reason, and Nick Young said it pretty well, he's a little soft in some areas off the court. On the court, this guy is a absolute legend. Off the court, he kind of can't handle that. He didn't want to handle that. It was weird. Like he's like, I'm, you know, he kind of played the villain early on, and then when it really came down to being that guy, he didn't really he couldn't really take that heat, and it was a little weird. And I feel like we were left a little short with that's my only thing, man. Glad we won. I'm glad we did a lot of good things. I do feel like the greatest things weren't seen off of that team. And I agree with the 73-win team being my favorite, but I have a weird feeling about next year's team being exciting as hell, and I want to hear what you think off the air.
So next year's team, on the surface, is probably no worse than the 7th or 8th greatest Warriors team ever assembled, and that's before it even dribbles the ball once. I mean, our standards are now so high that we're still looking at a team that is set up to be very, very good, and we're like, oh, man, it's going to be a brutal year. Not necessarily. It could be a lot more fun. And the thing about, look, Kevin Durant, we were talking about, look, if this is Madison Bumgarner's last night in a Giants uniform, or if this is Madison Bumgarner's last couple of nights in a Giants uniform, and it really is him in another uniform before it's all said and done. We know that we're going to get Kevin Durant in another uniform before we see him. Two incredibly significant postseason performers have now left the Bay Area in a very close amount of time, just right next to each other. And it's a shame. And does Kevin Durant really belong at the table of postseason greats? You know, Montana, Young is officially 1-0 in Super Bowls. Might have taken him a long time to get there and get it and get the monkey off his back in the famous moment, but it did happen. The Giants and what they did, performances from them. Look, the Kevin Durant thing ended so awkwardly that it feels like he doesn't necessarily deserve a seat at the table, but he does. It's an awkward seat at the table, but he's at the table. And what maybe makes it most awkward is we now sit him to the left of the dullest conversation on that. We don't put him at the head of the table. He could have been at the head of the table. He could have. He really could have. I mean, if this guy, say what you want about Steph Curry, if Kevin Durant went to 4 NBA finals and had 4 NBA finals MVPs, How do you deny that guy a seat at the head of the table if this is about postseason performance? It's just, it's crazy that it came to an end the way that it did when we all know that it could have been 3, 4, or 5, and we didn't even get 3. And it sounds like you're nuts. What do you mean you didn't even get 3? How can you complain about having any more than 2? Because there's no doubt in my mind that a healthy Achilles, and we've already had our third parade around Lake Merritt.
Well, again, his choice. He has to be aware, think what you will, of what opportunity he just turned down to take this unknown situation in Brooklyn, New York with a weirdo Kyrie Irving. But yeah, you go back to Shaq here for a second, Damon, because you have to think, and it's sort of come out slowly over time, the Shaq-Kobe feud, which were different circumstances than what we're talking about here with the Warriors. But you have to think both of them separately, even though they went on to win a couple of titles, one in Los Angeles, one in Miami. They have to deep down think, like, what could have been? And you do wonder that with Durant. You know, unless Durant goes on to win a couple of more titles and his decision is 100% validated, and it might be, how could he not in 15, 20 years think, man, we were cruising. We were going to a new building. We had been to the finals 5 straight years. I had been there 3 straight years. I was a 2-time finals MVP.
I mean, walked away. Why?
It's set up for him to really second guess the decision. Because you've heard from Shaq and Kobe that they think, why couldn't we work that out? Why did we have to break that up? Now, those were two players who just couldn't get along. One wanted to get paid. Everybody wanted to be the alpha. That was not what we saw here. But man, it's set up for regret big time for Kevin Durant. I don't know if he's wired that way, but
we don't know how he's wired. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much been a pivotal question since the day he got here. Someone says, hey, Damon, is Iguodala a postseason great? That's the only proper description of Andre Iguodala, other than he's the first free agent to legitimize the Golden State Warriors. Andre Iguodala was a regular season meh. In a postseason legend. Absolutely, he's sitting at the table. There's no doubt about it. This is Fred, West Oakland. Hello, Fred.
What's going on, gentlemen? Hey, you know what? Actually, Shaq left both times to get paid. So the first time when he left Orlando was just like he told that story, because I've heard him tell that story on many different shows. I mean, that was the time when $100 million contracts were first getting handed out. And I think he was like one of the first that summer, if it was summer of 95 or 96 or whatever, to receive one of those. And then the second time when he went to Miami was the same thing. He wanted to get paid, and Dr. Buss didn't pay him. So the owner of the Heat paid him. So, I don't think it had anything to do with, well, especially when he went to L.A. the first time, it didn't have anything to do with trying to build a super team. Second of all, back then in that era, I mean, you know, those guys' pay, man, was based on winning. Shoe contracts were not at the level that they are now. The other additional forms of revenue just weren't what it was. So, yeah, you have these guys from Shaq's generation and from Jordan's generation talking about they wouldn't want to go and play with and team up with anyone else because, I mean, that affected your money. Nowadays, these guys are making $200, $300 million from shoe contracts. So, yeah, they can kind of look at how they want to play and where they want to play a little bit differently.
Well, wasn't there a famous quote from Shaq at that time basically like saying, I hate people who sell out, and mm-hmm. I'm just over here wearing my Reeboks and drinking my Pepsi, watching all you sellouts?
Yeah.
I mean, so he was starting to make an awful lot of money off the court. And look, we could – Shaquille O'Neal was never making just a monetary decision. He didn't angle his way to a, you know, a higher profile Knicks team at the time. He angled his way to what he thought was going to be a better Miami team. And I'm sure, you know, no state income tax in the state of Florida was appealing at the time.
Do you think it was purely financial, though?
No.
You know, there's the stories that I've
heard
about.
Shaq doesn't come from the purely financial era.
Yeah, I mean, Shaq would you know, dribble, or he'd go run back on defense, as Shaq would play, and he'd be yelling at Jerry Buss to the caller's point. He'd be like, hey, you got to pay me, you got to pay me, you got to pay me. Like, you know, they used to hear that stuff. The reporters who cover them used to hear that. You can't convince me that that was just a financial breakup. That was much about their feud and much about their egos. You know,
oh, totally.
That team should have broken up. It's not like you had to make a financial choice to keep one or the other. Kobe went on ESPN and said, hey, listen, you know, it's either him or me. I got to go. And he turned the screws to it, and he leveraged his way into the, they both couldn't find the common ground to find where they want, where they could be successful again.
We're going to be back to baseball with Brian Kenny, one of the best just evaluators. He takes a statistical, unemotional approach, but he's also got one hell of a gig coming up this weekend. He is going to be emceeing the induction ceremonies at Cooperstown, and we'll ask him all about that. You've been.
I was there last year, actually.
I've been to Cooperstown, but never for the actual induction ceremony day. I've spent days in Cooperstown, but never on that day. And I always kind of regretted that I never got to see it. I told myself, oh man, when Andre Dawson goes, I'll be there. When Ryan Sandberg's in, I'll be there. When Barry Bonds gets in, I'll get. That's probably not gonna. But you know, so.
Yeah, I've been there twice. I went when Tony Gwynn got inducted. I went when Trevor Hoffman got inducted last year. And I will tell you, I would plan one more trip in my life. I will tell you for sure that I will make one more trip to Cooperstown.
Boach?
Yep.
Phenomenal conversation with Bruce Bochy coming up in our 5 o'clock hour. Andy in Novato. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Damon. How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
KD, the one of the biggest disappointments I have, and I don't have a lot of disappointments. He gave us, you know, some great basketball. But the thing that always bothered me is he never once acknowledged or, you know, retorted to all these people throwing stuff at him, literally, that, no, figuratively, that he's playing with guys who play this beautiful brand of basketball. And that his time with the Warriors was fulfilling, you know, in that sense, aesthetically, basketball-wise. But he was always so closed up about what I'm going to do next, he never even addressed that. So the other day, Sean Marks comes out with the Nets and says, well, now I can tell you why he came here. He told us he really likes the style of basketball we play. And I saw Ryan Russillo, who normally I don't think that much of, say, what are you kidding me? He just came from the most beautiful, successful style of basketball ever. And you're trying to pass off he's going to you because he likes the way you play.
Right. And it's a little ridiculous because what did we also learn about Durant? For sure, more than any point total, performance, individual performance that he would ever chase, like, here's what Kevin Durant would want 7 nights out of the week. He would rather go 8 of 9 from the floor and just be the model of efficiency than have an inefficient 43-point night. You know what I mean? Like, and there will never be another team that lends Kevin to play the most efficient brand of basketball that he could ever play than the Golden State Warriors.
I mean, yeah, it's impossible to look at that statement and think, wait a minute here. I mean, what was he? Was he adjusting his game? Did he really have to manipulate his game that much to fit into the Warrior system? You know, like, what are you talking about? Oh, I love the. He told us he loved the way we played. Yeah, we're a good fit for him. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, listen, you got to say something, don't you? You got to say something when somebody asks you. You can't say, well, he came here because this is where Kyrie wanted to go.
Right, he came here because his friends told him to.
You got to come up with some basketball reason to say, yeah, he apparently watched us.
But that's the thing. There is no basketball reason that justifies it. It's a personal choice for whatever he now deems as the, you know, itch that he has to scratch.
You got to say
career.
Something.
888-957-9570. By the way, this year in Cooperstown, we're getting our first ever unanimous.
Enter Sandman.
Remember that? I don't know if you saw that on MLB Network when they were introducing this year's Hall of Fame class. I don't know who it was doing it. We almost got it. Maybe you can find it and we can play it a little bit later for Darren. There was a terrible attempt at Spanish to say Mariano Rivera has been the first ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it really the only thing that we understood was
Enter Sandman.
And it was really, really, it's a weird announcement.
So who was it?
I don't remember even who it was. It was like baseball's associate commissioner.
Was it a Spanish speaker or was it somebody who gets up there and practices behind the scenes, behind the curtain, and then comes out and attempts some Spanish?
Enter Sandman.
Yeah, well, I do not know. Okay. Brian Kenny is right around the corner. I want you to go ahead and stay right there. One of the best conversations, and I got to sneak in a little bit of boxing with Brian Kenny before it's all said and done. So don't you move. With Darren Smith, you got it here on the Damon Bruce Show, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you back here on 95.7 The Game. Brian Kenny on MLB Network, one of my favorites, one of the best. You can catch him this weekend, by the way, and along with hosting MLB Now, he is going to be the MC for the Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremony in beautiful Cooperstown, New York. That is one cushy gig, Brian. Gorgeous out there. Thanks so much for joining us today. When do you head for upstate?
I'll be heading up probably tomorrow morning. Be ready to make the drive.
And the big headliner this year, obviously, Mariano Rivera, going to have it packed with pinstripes, don't you think?
It is. Cooperstown always fills up for the Yankees because you know so many fans can make the drive, so you have a lot of fans making the day trip. And I think with everybody included, because there's just Mariner fans always travel well. I think Edgar Martinez is, if he's not the most beloved Mariner, he's right there. And I think Rivera and Messina together, you know, as Yankees, Phillies fans for Roy Halladay, a lot of Chicago fans for Harold Baines, who's, you know, really loved there, and Lee Smith. I think it's just going to be a big combination, and it will probably be the biggest crowd in the history of induction weekend.
Wow. My my co-host today, Darren Smith, down in San Diego, based there for so many years, was in Cooperstown last year for Trevor Hoffman.
Last year for Trevor, and then the previous, and I don't know that it still is the highest attended induction weekend ever, but Tony Gwynn, Cal Ripken Jr. So I've been there a couple of times, BK.
Yeah, that's the standard right now. That's number one. Ripken and Tony Gwynn, that was said to be 75,000 to 80,000 people. It was monstrous. It was so big, and they're expecting more this weekend. I don't know how many more can get out in the fields, but I guess they'll just keep extending the fields going back.
There you go. Probably tough to get a hotel room in sleepy little Cooperstown, New York.
Good luck.
Always is. Yeah. Brian Kenny here on 95.7 The Game. Big game in San Francisco tonight because the Giants have sort of turn this season on its head by a winning streak right ahead of the trade deadline, where it looked like Madison Bumgarner might be among the headliners on the block. And here we are looking at what could be his final start in San Francisco in a home uniform tonight. Brian, and I got a little nostalgia washing over me. Like, can this not be about the future? Can this not be about trading value? Like, I just want to see one last good game of Mad Bum and then have Boch go get the ball in like the seventh inning and we just all have a big hug. Can I get that?
I think that's what everybody is leaning toward because, look, you can't say the Giants have been ruthlessly efficient, right, from this run. They've really tried to make it last. They re-sign their old players. They bring them back. They still have Posey and Belt and Brandon Crawford as well as Bumgarner. They kept that bullpen together for as long as possible. Bruce Bochy is still there. So they're kind of riding it out to the end. And I love that they are winning now. And look, in that National League, you're never far away from a second wild card. So it's probably not the best business decision to make, but you can see why some fans might be thinking, hold on, why don't we give this a run? Are you seeing how the Phillies are playing? You're saying we might not be better than they are. It'd be tough with the Brewers and the Cardinals and all the teams stacked up ahead of them. But I love that, you know, they're on the run that they're at now, and they're making it interesting again.
Well, you're somebody who always takes an analytical approach to it. You know that you know this is a sport that oftentimes can be played with emotion, and we talk about the romanticism of baseball, especially where you're heading this weekend, BK. But like, what would you be thinking? You know, if you were in the Giants front office, what would you be thinking about the next couple of weeks, specific to the players who might be on the move?
Well, I think it gives Farhan Zaidi, who is a very high level baseball executive, and he's been through this before, and you know, learned under Billy Beane with the A's, and I have great respect for his intellect and his ability to put together a roster. But I think this puts him in a position where how much are you getting back from Madison Bumgarner, you know, really? And some of the other players, like how tradable are they with their contracts? And if you're not getting what you want, well, you know, ride it out. Because how much are you really getting back? Is it going to be worth, hey, that one 19-year-old, you know, fireballing pitcher in high A ball? Probably not. Now, if you're looking at a blue chipper in double A, who's a first-round pick and who's going to be a cornerstone position player, well, that's different. But I think it gives them the ability to be a little more selective. And the other part of it is to even go deeper. Yeah, 5-6 years ago, there was real wisdom in tear it down, tear it all the way down. Don't spend any money on anybody you don't have to, and build from there. But now that so many teams are doing it, I think it's most clubs now have a better ability to spring from the middle class than they used to be. You can't have, you know, 15 rebuilding teams and think, oh, now we're going to be able to rebuild and everything's going to work out great. Maybe, maybe not. Not when the rest of the league is doing it. So I think that gives them, you know, a few different options here that we wouldn't have thought of even 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Interesting. Brian, with all the latest developments, you know, we've seen the Rockies come backwards. We've seen the Brewers come backwards a little bit. You just brought up a very interesting theory that there's such a wide middle class now, it doesn't take that much to rise above it. As teams start to retreat a little bit, do you think anyone who fancied themselves a contender a few weeks ago is now starting to question themselves?
Well, I think it was never really realistic for teams like the Pirates. The firepower is there. But the only team that separated themselves so far are the Dodgers.
Right.
The Braves have turned out to be quite good, and they're getting better. The Cubs, I think, are still an outstanding team. But that does leave the wild cards. Washington is on a very good run. They're a good club. But we saw how they started the season. The Phillies have come way back. The Mets have struggled, even though they've won a couple in a row now. So I think that's exactly the way you point out, that in any given week, the Diamondbacks will look pretty good. The Rockies will look pretty good. And, you know, there's probably going to be three division leaders. But to get into the tournament, like if you're not bored with that, if your organization isn't just tired of that, and there are some teams that, you know, for that reason, it's not worth shooting for that one game, especially on the road. But for other organizations, no, give us one shot. It's worth it. And if you're saying a last gasp for the Giants or even a team like the Texas Rangers, yeah, it's worth it to those sort of clubs with aging rosters. Ride it out and see where we end up.
All right, so here's how this season has to end. Giants, Rangers, World Series, Hunter Pence walk-off. What the hell just happened? What the hell just happened? What was that? That's the way this whole year's got to end now. We've got Brian Kenny, MLB Network on the Dial Pad. Guest line Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. Seriously, in any way does the win streak help Farhan create the illusion of, if you want Mad Bum, you got to come and get him with maybe a little bit more than you thought it would take to get him, because keeping him around is not really a bluff, but an actual option for him to take.
Correct. And he's a legacy player. And I think that's what the Giants have always recognized, and ownership has recognized that. And he's pitching well enough. He hasn't been great this year, like otherwise there'd be more demand. But I think that leaves it just in a position where, you know what, we can just ride this out. Again, if you're not getting someone that you think is going to start for you, a position player that's going to be a foundation player, then you might as well ride it out. So I think it does give them, it's not fake leverage, it's real leverage that, you know, it means something to us to keep our championship player. We're still putting people into the stands. We have a great relationship with our fan base, and part of that is that we keep our players. And I think this gives them the impetus to actually ride this out and say, no, we're going to go out and style the way we want to and not just flip them for, you know, for a spare part here or there.
You talked a little bit about the process of maybe stepping back in order to step forward, and that you're not going to go do what the Cubs and Astros did just because there's too much competition for that. Farhan comes over from the Dodgers, and that's where you start, right? The Giants aren't the type of organization that is going to be competing for a wild card every couple of years and telling their fans that this is what we define success. So, you know, with that in mind, do you see any window of opportunity closing in Los Angeles? I mean, how present is the Dodgers organization here for what the Giants want to do?
Well, you never know how it's going to turn out. You don't. I mean, the Dodgers are peaking right now, and they've got a very strong core. Their position players that they've brought up now are turning out to be good and great. Seager's back on the field. Bellinger has turned into a superstar. They're going to be very good. But you can't look forward 3 years and say, wow, our window just won't be there. We thought the Cubs would be a super team for a number of years. You know, we thought the Yankees would have to rebuild, but they bounced right back. We thought the Red Sox this year would be great. You know, you never know how it's going to all turn out. So you can't put your plans on hold because you think there's a couple of super strong teams in your division. It won't play out that way. You have to kind of go year by year, especially now that we've now gone back to so many teams doing the full rebuild. And when everybody's, you know, when everybody's zigging, you can't just zig and expect the same results. So I think the general template has changed, and I think now there's a new way of doing business. I'm sure Farhan recognizes that, and it's just a matter of freeing up his payroll, because the Giants are a big market organization. They're they're a top spender, but now they're spending money on parts and players that just aren't churning out the production for them. So they have to get clear of that. So they're probably still a few years away, and who knows what the Dodgers look like at that point.
You can watch Brian host MLB Now throughout the regular season, plus MLB Network, your exclusive home of the National Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremony Sunday. Coverage begins, Brian hosting at 8 a.m. our time out here on the Pacific Coast. He is emceeing what will be a glorious afternoon. You know, you talk about legacy players, and the Giants are always good at rewarding their fans by holding on to legacy players. A big disconnect the A's have always had is because they aren't known for that. The A's have won 19 of 23, meanwhile. Matt Chapman is like as sure a bet as there could possibly be. And in terms of modern finances, with players being extended earlier than ever in their careers, like, don't you think Billy Beane would do an awful lot of good by, like, plopping down a bunch of money to make sure that the Nolan Arenado of the American League isn't going anywhere for the next 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years?
That would make sense. I mean, he can't be a free agent until 2024, so they have that leverage on him now. However, that changes year by year. He's already put up the type of numbers that he's a star player, and his defense makes him a superstar player. So, yeah, I think my philosophy, Damon, is always that if you think a guy can start for you for a number of years, doesn't have to be even going to All-Star games or be an MVP candidate. If you think he's going to start for your club, it's worth extending him. So Chapman is way beyond that. And what their budget is, I don't know, but he is the type of player that you build around.
Could not have Brian Kenny on the show without asking him about the passing of Pernell Whitaker, fatally struck by a car not too long ago. Sweet Pea was an HBO darling. Like in my childhood, lots of my boxing memories are dotted with him. In the ring, Brian, who was harder to hit, Whitaker or Mayweather?
That's very close. And I hope fans now recognize how great Pernell Whitaker really was. He was, I would say, the best boxer of this recent generation. I think the greatest fighter I've ever seen with my own eyes was Roy Jones Jr. Pernell Whitaker was considered, and I would consider him, the best boxer of the generation, best pure boxer. And Floyd Mayweather certainly put himself into that conversation. But that's what we're talking about. The best boxers of the generation are Roy Jones Jr., Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, Julio Cesar Chavez. Pernell Whitaker is at the top of the list. And then you can always, Bernard Hopkins, of course, and then get to Mike Tyson and that sort of thing. But Pernell is the boxer's favorite. Even on the 1984 U.S. Olympic team, Mark Breland was considered the best boxer back then. And Meldrick Taylor was on that team. Evander Holyfield was on that team. And Evander was highly regarded by the time he was, in that controversial stoppage, right? So everyone knew who he was. It was a superstar-laden class. But the fighters there on that team said Pernell was the best boxer. And so, yeah, it is sad. And I'll say something else. When I was doing Friday Night Fights, we had a lot of the greats come by, and I would spend the day with them, and then we'd go on and do the show on ESPN on Friday Night Fights. And Pernell came in, and I thought, I didn't know what to expect with him. He's a big star and that sort of thing, and, he'd been around for a long time. He always had that, he had that kind of an aloof look on his face. He didn't seem the friendliest guy. He was the easiest person to get along with, I think, that I've ever met. He came in by himself, no entourage. We just hung out, and we did a little stand-up thing where we do a little boxing thing, and I ask for some tips or what are the secrets of success. And I can tell you, he was just, you could tell you were dealing with a genius. He was just a boxing genius. So he was a good guy, just easy to, to know, down to earth, and one of the best fighters we've ever seen.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked you about that. Thank you, Brian. That was fantastic. You are among the most interesting men in the room at all times. Thank you. Have a great time at Cooperstown in upstate New York. One of the great weekends. Baseball does it right up there always, and I know that they're all in great hands with you emceeing the induction ceremony. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Damon. I appreciate it. Take care.
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.